You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Club, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.
Been one of those things where it's like, I thank God it's the weekend, you know. And the other thing is, I was thinking, you know, because the main topic of our episode is about zombies. You think, do zombies ever get tired? Or do you think they're always consistently, you know, happy and hungry? And I mean, that's just kind of the
well, hold thing. On, happy and hungry don't go together.
I think so.
No, hangry. Hangry is the
hangry, thing. But then you're angry when you're hungry.
Yeah. So like, I'm never happy and hungry. Mm-hmm. I'm always like pissed the fuck off.
Yeah.
Because I need a Snickers.
And that's why they want to eat people. That would be great if you ever like give a zombie a Snickers and you just become a regular human again. That'd be a good commercial.
The cure. That's the cure for eternal life. It's mm-hmm. Snickers. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever had a Snickers, you know it is.
That makes sense. Welcome, everyone, to our most recent episode of We Are Air. I am very tired, Christopher Herman, and I am joined by my co-host, John Romo.
Mildly tired.
Mildly tired, yeah. You've been busy. You moved into your new apartment. Mm-hmm. You're having a good time. You know,
trying to play some video games.
Trying to play some video games, yeah. Well, possibly you might be reviewing something very soon that John's been playing. But yeah, let's just kind of get right into the news, shall we? So Walton Goggins is in the final negotiations to star as the antagonist in the upcoming Tomb Raider reboot movie. Other than Goggins' role as a villain, no other details about his character are known, according to Variety. Goggins, who recently starred in Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight and HBO's Vice Principals, will join Oscar-winning actress Alicia Vikander of Ex Machina and The Danish Girl fame, who was cast earlier this year to play Lara Croft. Roar Utag will direct the latest film adaptation of the popular franchise, and is said that it will draw inspiration from the latest Tomb Raider games. More recently, we learned that the film would focus on Lara Croft's search for her father. Tomb Raider's reboot will open theaters on March 16th, 2018. I mean, I have to say that the fact that Walton Goggins has been cast in this film, I mean, that's a nice sign. Clearly, they're going for talent. For this video game adaptation.
And charisma. Mm-hmm. Walton Goggins is my favorite part of The Hateful Eight.
Oh, yeah, really?
He's the one that just kind of seems, he puts his foot in his mouth, like, from the get-go, and he just kind of, the way he, like, has this southern charm, but yet kind of dumb, but still sly and smart.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like he's playing, racist. He's the one that's just playing so many different levels, mm-hmm. I think, in the movie, and not necessarily the most just, like, brute force anger type of character, because like I have mixed feelings on The Hateful Eight.
Same.
I love it at times, but then other times I'm just like, this is so mean. I don't really think I
oh
like.
Yeah, it's a nasty film.
Yeah, but Goggins to me throughout that film had so much fun with it. He seemed to be the one that was just like exploring a lot of things, and I really think you're right, this is the kind of thing I want to see from a video to game adaptation, high talent. Mm-hmm. Which, like, if we're talking about like the Assassin's Creed movie too, in Prince of Persia, they kind of get high quality talent.
Yeah, well, I say definitely for Assassin's Creed, where, yeah, I mean, yeah, you have
one. You know, Jake Gyllenhaal fan?
I like Jake Gyllenhaal, but he shouldn't have been cast as a Persian character. I'm sorry, it doesn't make
that's
any
true.
Sense. That was kind of fucked up. But like Assassin's Creed, Tomb Raider is clearly going for talented people. So I think, honestly, I'm looking forward to the movie more than I think I had been previously, even with Alicia Vikander's casting.
The instant they cast Alicia Vikander, I was like, no, this is going to be a serious thing. Because she was hot off Ex Machina. And she very much is the rebooted Lara Croft.
Yeah.
The one who has much more of a focus on character and less of oh, look at me, I have boobs.
Yeah, that's it. She's not just a pair of boobs.
I knew from the get-go that the direction of the movie was something more tasteful mm-hmm. and more something, I think, again, I've talked about it, how Tomb Raider is now going to play an important role about, like, the representation of women in gaming, and I think Alicia Vikander, and that's great casting on its own, but adding Walton Goggins to play opposite her is another stellar choice, and I'm really excited. I do think it's really weird that they already have a date set. Mm-hmm. That is nothing on the movie, this movie itself, but just the way Hollywood works, I always think it's weird. Why have, it's more than a year away now.
Yeah.
Like, why have it hard set? Why not just say March? The Switch is apparently like 3 months away. We still don't have a hard date. Yeah. So like,
well, we'll see what happens with that. But I'm excited for the film at this point. We have a big EA announcement, or maybe small, depending on what your kind of favorite games are. But Sea of Solitude is the latest title to be brought under the Electronic Arts Indie Focus EA Originals label. Berlin-based Joe My Games unveiled Sea of Solitude in February 2015 with some beautiful screenshots and GIFs on the game's website. Sea of Solitude tells the story of Kay, a young woman so lonely that she was transmorgified into a monster. Kay putters around a deserted, partially submerged city on a small motorboat, encountering other creatures like her as she tries to understand what has happened to her. Sea of Solitude is by far the most artistic and personal project I've ever created, said Cornelia Gispert, the game's writer and creative director, in an article from EA. At times, it is very challenging to dig that deep into your own feeling, like core fears, longing, anger. But at the same time, it is the most fulfilling thing to express those very feelings by putting it to people through art. Patrick Soderlund, executive vice president of EA Studios, announced the company's EA Originals program during the company pre-E3 press briefing this year. The initiative is designed to help bring to market indie games that are unique, gorgeous, innovative, and memorable, said Soderlund at the time. Developers working on EA original titles will receive funding for development, marketing, and publishing, as well as more of the profits than they would get at traditional publishing arrangement. Sea of Solitude is the second EA original title. EA unveiled the program with Fae, another exploration-oriented 3D platformer that is being developed by Zoink Games. I like that name, Zoink. It's very, very, very game-sounding.
It's very Scooby-Doo-esque.
Yeah. Exactly. Shaggy. I just got that. From what we've kind of seen with this game, it's kind of like a rough concept, and, you know, I think some of the character models aren't really, like, there, you know, but, I'm really appreciate that EA is definitely pursuing this. I think this is both because, you know, they want to support kind of smaller developers, but also I think from a marketing standpoint, it makes them look better. It's like, hey, we're not just the big, you know, conglomerates new like Activision that only greenlights, you know, AAA games. You know, we can, you know, spotlight, you know, some of the smaller titles. And even like this year with the early release of like, it's not part of this program, but it was kind of what started this program was Unravel, which is kind of like a 2D side-scroller where you play a little character named Yarny and you basically use your body.
It's a bad name.
I think it's cute.
Yarny.
He's adorable. I think he's really cute.
What is he made of yarn?
He's made of yarn. And he uses his body to get around and he can unravel on... Because that's the name.
I got it.
I think from what I've seen, I want to see the game in a more complete state. But like I said, I'm glad EA is definitely pursuing this.
Yeah, EA's been doing a lot to sway my favor. Mm-hmm. Just... supporting the indies, and I think, was it last week or the week before, we talked about them taking a year off from Battlefield?
Yeah.
And, like putting in the work.
Yeah.
And that seems very non-EA, at mm-hmm. least for the company that's been named worst company for the past, like,
which
four
even
years
that,
around, which is bull. Yeah, it's stupid.
Come on.
There's BP.
Yeah, like, BP, Halliburton. Yeah, there's a lot of evil companies.
It gets a lot worse than EA, the maker of video games. Mm-hmm, but, this is just a great move to see. I think all the big names, all the big publishers should invest in the indies, which at what point do we kind of stop calling them indies? Because you're not independent
they're just,
anymore.
Yeah, at this point, they're just kind of, they're just games.
Just
at
like,
this point.
Yeah, and that's, I love that melding of the distinct, like, the distinction isn't there anymore. We talked mm-hmm. about this with the Game Awards, where calling something like best indie game or best small scale, whatever it was called, I think that was the project, and we were like, well, that's sort of the way the Oscars treat animated films. Like, at some point, it's a game, mm-hmm. and it's an action-adventure game, or it's a narrative game. Like, just because your budget is under a set amount versus a game that's above a set amount doesn't mean you are worth less. Mm-hmm. If anything, what you achieve is a greater achievement because it is more intimate in a sense. But I mean, I guess that's apples and oranges in each his own at that point. Mm-hmm. But anyway, EA, can do anything. Yeah, I thought this said Sea of Solitaire. And I thought it was a reboot of Solitaire.
Oh, okay.
For that, fun goof.
Yeah, I'm glad. You think I would put like a thing on Solitaire on the list? Come on.
I mean, you talk about Mass Effect a lot.
I do. Well,
put a chow.
Yeah, Mass Effect's great. We have a Final Fantasy 15 update. Final Fantasy 15 director Hajime Tabata has begun detailing plans for the future, free updates for the game, from gameplay improvements to new content. In two separate blog posts, Tabata laid out the roadmap for the game's post-release patches, which will roll out throughout the coming year. First to come are changes to the game's 13th chapter, a lengthy and heavily criticized portion of the game. Tabata explained that it'll receive gameplay improvements to make it more palatable for fans, like making the magical ring item more powerful. Other enhancements will be revealed closer to the patch's release. Later patches will focus on narrative, with more cutscenes filling in the gaps in some character storylines. This will require localization and voice acting, Tabata wrote, so players shouldn't expect these updates for some time. There are also plans for a new game plus mode that will allow players to carry stats over to new playthroughs, as well as options for different kinds of playstyles. New bosses and achievements are also in the works. Final Fantasy XV, as many people have said, has been well received by critics since its release last week. It kind of goes against, though, I think what Tabata was originally saying, like before this game was released, that when it was delayed again, like it was supposed to come out like September 30th, and he said, oh, we still need to, you know, fix all these problems with the games. Like, there's still problems that you need to fix.
But it doesn't even sound like bug fixes necessarily. It sounds more like maybe we made a design choice, or like something with adding cutscenes isn't necessary. Something where maybe you need to buff the stats of an item. Mm-hmm. Even that isn't necessarily necessary. The game still functions. The game still works.
Yeah.
It sounds more like, and I don't know if you're a big music fan, but Kanye West, The Life of Pablo, his album that came out this year.
I'm not a fan of Kanye West.
You're not a fan of Kanye West. But what about his music?
I like the one song that was in Saints Row 3. That's it.
What, Power?
Yeah, I like that one.
That's a great album. Please, mm-hmm. for the love of God, listen to that album.
Okay, but I this won't, is, but okay.
But Kanye West, this year, he put an album called The Life of Pablo. All
right.
And you know how music has kind of shifted that industry with Spotify and Tidal and Apple Music. Well, he played the album live, like to debut it. Mm-hmm. And I remember listening to it because I'm a huge Kanye West music fan. He's an asshole, I get it, but I'm a Kanye West music fan.
Okay.
I doubt many of you would have liked Steve Jobs, but you'll play with your iPhone, so like, shut up.
Mm-hmm.
When he finally released it on Tidal, which is where it started exclusively, it sounded a little different.
Yeah.
Then he released it on Spotify like a month later. Mm-hmm. It already sounded like he made tweaks to it. And one of my favorite songs, Social Light Beam, sounds a little different now than it did when it first released. Now you can hear, because I remember distinctly listening to it later, and it had a new backtrack, a new backing vocals to layer things on. He since added new songs to the track. And this is what I relate it to in this Final Fantasy updates. With those cutscenes, you're kind of changing the makeup of the game and how someone would experience the narrative, because you're adding more explanation, you're adding new layers. And I don't think I like that. I think you're kind of twisting really what the game is, in a sense, and you're also forcing those people who played it through one time, you're forcing them to, like, if they really care about the story, then maybe they need to go back. Yeah. And I have heard complaints that the story is sort of obtuse at the beginning. Like, you don't know why you're doing these things.
I've seen playthroughs, I'm like, I don't know who these people are, fuck is happening.
The only reason, like, you would know is because you watched Kingsglaive, or or you watched the anime, which is a weird thing to make someone have to do. Maybe you fucked up a little bit on your narrative.
Yeah, it's dumb. Yeah, that's the thing. That to me shows that the fact that they're going back and we need to fix the narrative, that doesn't need to be fixed. You know, it's only if you, I mean, Final Fantasy 10 or 10, 15 has had such a long and troubled, you know, development cycle, for the past like decade or so. I think it was announced in 2006 or something like that. It was ridiculous. And so, yeah, the fact that they're having issues with the narrative, it's like, that's kind of the first things you want to nail down. It's like, you can have a crappy narrative, but if there's like stuff that is missing from your game that was either taken out or you didn't know how to work in there, that's just lazy and incompetent to me.
I don't think the cutscenes were cut. I think I'm just guessing.
You know,
I think it's
they could just not been there.
I think it's more they heard the criticism.
Yeah.
Of like the narrative's a little obtuse, mm-hmm. and Square going, oh well, okay, let's kind of make some cutscenes because I assume they're really good at just like churning cutscenes out or something.
I have no idea.
And like the voice work and the localization, that'll take longer. But
yeah.
that seems more like a reaction, which on the one hand is doesn't seem very Square.
I don't know, someone like Square,
I don't think they really listen or care half the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That's just the thing with Square is that, yeah, they're so weird. And they, I mean, they do what they want to do. And most of the time, it's not good. And, you know, I've had a, I'm just, the more I hear about this game, and I know people are, you know, over the moon about it. Everything I've seen, I'm thinking, I don't believe anyone that's saying that this thing is the best thing of the year. It's like bullshit. From what I've seen.
I'm really excited to play this game.
Yeah,
I didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Then someone tweeted, oh, this is just like what Kingdom Hearts should have been. Oh, like, oh, Jesus. Son of a bitch. Really?
See, that's...
The gameplay is like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm hyped.
See, that's when I see the gameplay. This looks like Kingdom Hearts. That's what I'm like...
That's my steez right there. And yeah. like, if this is any sort of hint at what Kingdom Hearts 3 can be...
Mm.
And I love that Kingdom Hearts 3 narrative.
I know.
We already know that's like
all that nonsense.
I'm hyped.
Moving on from that, the PlayStation 4 was the top-selling console for November, taking back the spot from its rival console, the Xbox One. Sony confirmed that the PS4 was the best-selling console in the U.S., but had no formal statement on the matter. Up until November, Xbox One was the top-selling console in the U.S. for 4 straight months, something the company credited to the launch of its revised Xbox One S console. November saw the release of Sony's PlayStation 4 Pro, the upgraded version of the base PS4 hardware. November was also loaded with Black Friday sales, which no doubt helped move units, especially discounted older PS4s. Worldwide since release, PlayStation 4 has sold 50 million consoles, and with a few rare exceptions, the console dominated the sales figures month after month until Xbox One broke the streak beginning in July. While the Xbox One beat PS4 that month, both consoles came in behind Nintendo's 3DS. In a statement from Microsoft, it said it plans to extend its $50 off offer on all Xbox One S consoles beginning December 11th at participating U.S. retailers. I guess I'm not too surprised by this. I mean, there was a ton of great deals throughout the Black Friday weekend. And, I mean, yeah, PlayStation 4 certainly had just as great deals as Xbox One did. I didn't feel like the need to pick up a PS4 Pro or anything like that. But I did pick up several PS4 games. So I'm not surprised that people – I think a lot of people have who may have not even thought about buying the console have finally like, oh, now I'm going to pick up my PS4, my Xbox One. And they clearly went for the PS4 because that's the more popular console at the moment, or I guess of this generation so far.
Yeah, I was actually a little surprised about the Xbox One selling better in the U.S. for 4 straight months. I really guess it did have to do with the redesign and everything,
because
mm-hmm. That original console is a piece of garbage. I have it, and I don't love it. Also, I know the redesign makes it look better, but you do realize there's still built on that funky 3 OSs that are built on top of each other because Microsoft couldn't decide because they wanted to make it part of Windows 10 and it just doesn't work because Microsoft can't make a decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I think we've said that the PS4 itself is a better piece of hardware.
It's more focused is the thing.
To a certain extent, but I still like elements from the Xbox One, like Xbox Live, much, much better. And the controller as well. There's certain elements that I like more of the Xbox One than with the PS4. I mean, I think they both have their pros and cons, you know, to this day.
And somehow, I don't understand how the 3DS beat them.
Pokemon. It's that Pokemon stuff that came out during November.
How many more people are left to get a 3DS?
I don't know.
Do you need any more? I know Trace got one because he got that. He waited in a line to get the $100 thing.
Right. I mean, that was a great deal. That's probably why it sold so well. I mean, $100. I mean, at this point,
he can play his SNES games.
Yeah, he can. Well, not some. Oh, yeah, because it's a new 3DS.
He's got the new one.
Yeah, it's bullshit. I hate that fucking thing. Let's move on to something that'll make you happy.
Oh, or it might not because I watched the trailer.
Your favorite marsupial Crash Bandicoot is back. He's enhanced, entranced, and ready to dance with the Insane Trilogy game collection.
I hate all of this.
Now you can experience Crash Bandicoot like never before in 4K spin. Jump, wump, and repeat as you take on the epic challenges and adventures through the three games that started all. Crash Bandicoot, Crash Bandicoot 2, Cortex Strikes Back, and Crash Bandicoot Warped. Relive all your favorite Crash moments in this fully remastered HD graphical glory, and get ready to put some oomph in your womp. What the fuck does womp mean anyway?
I added that out. Because I was like, they wrote that copy as if womp is a thing?
Yeah.
Is that a thing in Crash? I don't remember.
I don't know. You would know more than I would. But yeah, at the most recent PSX, which was a great conference, by the way, I think they did a stellar job. One of the trailers that they showed was for the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy Collection. And, you know, someone who does not like Crash Bandicoot in terms of, like, just gameplay, because it sucks. The game, shown, this remastered version, it looks great. It looks beautiful. Very cartoony. It's very vibrant. I was kind of taken aback at how good it looked.
Yeah, especially when they did the back-to-back, they would play the PS1 graphics, and then they would play new graphics, and I'm just like, whoa, that's actually I think for someone who may not really know who Crash is or be interested, just seeing that graphical overhaul, and we've talked about remasters in the past, and there are plenty of times where they just kind of phone it in, or somehow it's worse.
Yeah.
So the fact that Activision, are they the ones who own the license? Activision and Sony?
Yeah, I mean, Activision owns the license, but I think they're doing, like, a partnership with Sony. In regards to those. Because Crash is also in, like, Skylander.
Okay. See them put the work in, I think, is nice.
Shows that they care, at least.
That gameplay, I'm scared. I know I've been defending Crash, but, like, watching the game, watching the gameplay in the trailers, like, he's awfully slow, huh?
Yeah.
And he looks clunky. That jump mechanic doesn't look great.
No, it doesn't.
Also, this is Temple Run.
Yeah. It's pretty much. I admire it in terms of its aesthetic. It looks, like, again, cartoony and fun, but from what I played with Crash Bandicoot, which was on the PS1 era, they were, like, some of the best-selling games in the PS1. I didn't like them. It was kind of the one of the first kind of, eventually those games that kind of led to the proliferation of, like, those third person platformer games, you know, platformers. And that was kind of one of the first ones, but it was so primitive. Like, we look back at the time.
I do love third person platformers though. That's my favorite genre.
I know. But yeah, in this case, I can appreciate it, but I don't think I'm going to play this. You know, maybe you can play. You can tell me in a review.
I'll probably play it, start it up, and go, God dang it, I made a bad decision.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But there are several other trailers at PSX. Probably one of the most popular ones was for Uncharted The Lost Legacy.
Crowd went crazy.
They certainly did, which is a spin-off title from the Uncharted franchise. From the critically acclaimed developer Naughty Dog comes from the first standalone adventure in the Uncharted series. Fan favorite character Chloe Frazier must enlist the aid of a renowned mercenary Nadine Ross from Uncharted 4 Thief's End in order to recover a fabled ancient Indian artifact and keep it out of the hands of a ruthless war profiteer. Together, they'll venture deep into the mountains of India in search of the legendary artifact. Along the way, they'll learn to work together to unearth the mystery of the artifact, fight their way through fierce opposition, and prevent the region from falling into chaos. Building upon the critically acclaimed gameplay and storytelling of Uncharted 4 Thief's End, Uncharted The Lost Legacy features all the hallmarks of the series, including a rich cinematic story, exotic new destinations, intricate puzzles, and action-packed set pieces. It will be available as a standalone game on store shelves and for digital download. If you already have purchased the Uncharted 4 Digital Deluxe Edition or the Explorers Pack, you will get Uncharted The Lost Legacy as a download at launch. I mean,
that's nice.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I mean, for me, I think I'm very excited for the standalone title because, one, it features, you know, Chloe Frazier, who's probably one of my favorite characters in the Uncharted franchise, you know, starring her, and also another character, Nadine Ross.
I love Nadine. It's like, she's great.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know what happened to her at the end of Uncharted 4. She kind of just leaves you and Rafe, and Drake to kind of die together. I'm very interested, and you were absolutely right that, because at the time when I watched her, I'm like, is that Nadine? And
her voice sounds different.
Yeah, doesn't it?
And I can't tell if, one, it's a new voice actress, or she's just playing a younger Nadine, because the Nadine looks a little younger than she does. And she also looks a little, I can't tell if it's the lighting, but, like, fair-skinned, too. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, well, her style looks different. Like I remember in the Uncharted 4, she had her hair down. Mm-hmm. And here
she
it's
just
like
looks
an
badass and tough in Uncharted 4. Like, someone you would not want to Here she looks a little more agile, a little thinner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a youngness thing. I just keep thinking, because Chloe played much more of a prominent role in the second game.
Yeah,
I keep feeling like this is, like, somewhere right after 3 or They just look younger.
Yeah, they don't say when this game takes place, if it takes place before 4 or after 4 or anything. I imagine somewhere. I think it's definitely after 3. You know, I would guess that. And I mean, I'm interested to know what happened to Chloe, because you know she was not featured at all in 4, and maybe we'll eventually see some.
Maybe she dies.
I hope not.
That's probably what happens.
Yeah,
she probably does.
No, they can't do that. Naughty Dog with the Uncharted franchise, it's a pulp adventure. I don't think they'd kill one of the most popular characters.
One game, guys.
She was in 2 games.
Barely in 3.
Yeah, well, she's in the first third of 3. I think she's a great character, and she's a fan favorite. So I'm really excited for this, and I think that the fact that they're making her... honestly, I would play a full-scale Uncharted game with Chloe. I think that'd be great. If they were ever to continue this franchise on in a different direction, like Next Generation. Like, she's the new star of Uncharted. I'd be fine with that, because I think she's the most sexy Indiana Jones.
She's the most similar to Drake.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that makes aesthetically a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I also find it interesting that it's a standalone game that'll be on shelves.
Yeah.
What do you think the cost?
$30.
30?
I think it'll be that. $30 or $40.
I would definitely buy it for $30.
Yeah.
$40, I'd think about it.
I'm going to buy it anyway. So probably the biggest trailer that was revealed was for The Last of Us Part 2. Of course, I mean, when...
We've talked about this a lot before this was
revealed. We certainly have. And of course, I just love how the trailer starts out where... At first, it's like in this wooded area. And then I think everyone knew at that point, like in the audience, they said, oh, this is The Last of Us 2. And then, of course, when I went to that like stop sign or whatever and it had like the Firefly symbol, it's like, oh, yeah, there we go. And of course,
this was after the Uncharted trailer, correct?
This is after, yeah. The Uncharted trailer opened the PSX.
Okay. See, I wouldn't have known. Like, yeah. To expect multiple announcements from Naughty Dog?
Yeah.
That seems...
That was the biggest surprise. Like, I expected Uncharted because I thought Naughty Dog had mentioned earlier in the year that there would be single-player... content for Uncharted 4. Obviously, it took on a life of its own. Now it's going to be a separate title. But I did not expect A Last of Us 2 to be announced here. I knew they were working on it because Nolan North, like a year ago or so,
he let it slip
that they were working on it. So I'm like, okay, it's clearly happening. But I was very surprised that they ended the conference with this. And of course, you know, it's pretty much just a cutscene. There's no gameplay shown at all. Mm-hmm. Maybe like an environmental type thing where, you know, showcasing the environment, but no gameplay. And it kind of features a much older Ellie kind of playing a guitar. And then singing this great song. I don't know off the top of my head what it was. But then it plays out where Joel, or who later is revealed in Joel, he's kind of walking through this house that Ellie's in. And then you see all these dead bodies everywhere. They've just been butchered. And, of course, then he goes to confront Ellie and basically asking her, are you sure you want to do this? And you kind of learn through this that Ellie's on some type of a quest of revenge. I mean, and... As I kind of want to get into it right here, because the Neil Druckmann kind of went in to explain like what the theme of Last of Us Part 2 is. During a panel discussion for The Last of Us Part 2 at this year's PSX, the game's director Neil Druckmann revealed, whereas the first game was about love, the follow-up would be about hate. The game's bleakness came through in its announcement trailer, which introduced a sobering conversation about the people she needed to kill. A dead body lies on the floor, her hands are calloused and scraped. If there's any salvation to be found in the world of The Last of Us 2, it's unclear whether Ellie is searching for it. If the first game was really about the love between these two characters, this story is the counter of that, Druckmann explained early on. This is a story about hate through Ellie this time. The first game you play is Joel, this game you play is Ellie. Ellie's now 19, and the years spent surviving the collapse of civilization have taken their toll. She's gone through some shit, Johnson said later during the discussion, who voices Ellie. Naughty Dog is using new performance capture technology for The Last of Us Part 2, which they actually showcased after the presentation at PSX. So I think the fact that the whole game centers around hate, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, I bet it's going to come full circle where she's going to figure out that Joel lied to her all those years ago.
Oh, we've talked about this off mic. Mm-hmm. I think when we met up during the review for Why Him?
Yeah.
Horrible film, by the way.
Yeah, awful.
But yeah, we basically wrote the story for the game. We were like, I assume Joel has told Ellie some sort of lie. Like, the Fireflies are the reason, you know, that... she couldn't be used, or like, mm-hmm. that's why when they got, because at the end of Last of Us, he told her that everyone's dead or they'd already given up.
He said it didn't work, they wanted to do.
And I guess he assumes, there's some sort of way where he lies to her, blames it on the Fireflies, and so she's out on this hunt mm-hmm. for Fireflies and all their leaders, and I assume that's what's going on, and she's just like, killing them. And the whole time I can see them kind of discussing it. And maybe in the back of her mind, she knows it's Joel. Mm-hmm. And eventually the finale is sort of, you know, that reveal.
Yeah.
And her feel like Joel's dead. If Joel's got
it. That's the thing. I think it would be awesome and so dark and depressing. Like the exact opposite of Uncharted, where I don't want anyone in Uncharted to die because it's a fun, pulpy adventure. Like, I want The Last of Us Part 2 to end where Ellie kills Joel. And that, cause if the theme of this game is all about hate, like, that hate would boil over in her, that she would kill the person who loves her more than probably anything in the world. And so I think that would just be very appropriate. And that would be, to me, a perfect end for Ellie and Joel's story, that it started, it kind of, where the relationship for a long time was built on a lie, and now it has to come to an end. So I think that'd be very appropriate.
How old was Ellie in the first game?
She was like 13, I want to say.
Okay,
it's been 6 years.
Okay, I was just wondering. I thought it was a full decade jump, and I was like, she wasn't 9, right?
No, she was older than that. But
Are you excited?
Oh, I'm thrilled! I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
I have such mixed emotions about it. Like I saw the Firefly scene one. I was like, damn it, why? Mm. And then just like the song and like seeing the animation, I was like, fuck, I want to play this game.
It looks
so
great.
Bad.
I mean, I'm fine if like Last of Us just being the one single game, and I had no problems with the end. I thought it was a great ending. But if they want to continue the story, I don't blame them. And I think it's, again, I want to see the end of the Joel and Ellie relationship, because I think that's going to be very interesting.
I just feel such a whirlwind of emotions with these characters, and I think, again, that's just Naughty Dog doing their Naughty Dog thing, being the best damn developers out there. Mm-hmm, also, we won't play this until late 2018.
I think 2018 is the earliest we're gonna play.
We'll see Uncharted time. Like summer next year.
We'll see. Yeah, because I think they said 2017 for the Lost Legacy. So that, and I maybe 2018 for Last of Us Part Two. Probably, I would guess maybe early 2019.
Early 2019?
Yeah.
I'll be a zombie by then.
I'll walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and I fear no evil because I'm blind to it all. In my mind, my gun, they comfort me, because I know I'll kill my enemies when they come.
So clickers aren't zombies?
Yes, they are.
No.
They're a type of zombie. They're a brand of the zombie spectrum.
And you call them chloriceps? Like
chloride? That's the infection. It's like a fungal infection. Uh-huh. As we know, in The Last of Us, it first kind of spread through like a mutated version of a fungus. When people were infected, it basically makes them go crazy. Kind of like you ever seen that video of that parasite that infects an ant? And it basically controls the ant's
body. That's crazy.
That's what chloriceps are. That's the infection. But instead of ants, it infects humans. And so once a person has been infected by the chloriceps, then they in turn then would attack other people. And then once they bite you, that infection then spreads throughout your entire body. And then you are then forced to become super aggressive. And then you eventually get all fungusy and monstery looking. Again, zombies.
Is that ant dead?
No, it's not.
Then no. The ant is not a zombie. Mm-hmm. Are the humans dead?
The humans are actually... That's a terrifying thing about the chloriceps, is that they're actually aware the entire time of what's happening to them. But
wait, how do you know that?
Because that's what they explain in The Last of Us.
How would they know that?
Because Naughty Dog explained it that way. Yeah, that people
in
are
game,
aware.
In game?
Oh, no, in interviews.
Neil Druckmann came out and was like, hey, let me tell you about these chloriceps.
Chloriceps.
Chloride.
Chloride. Shut up. They're zombies.
No, okay.
They're zombies.
If you're not dead, you are not a zombie.
But are zombies dead? They're undead. They came back.
They died and then they like unhumanly got brought back to life. So like if you never died, you are not a zombie.
You're not technically a zombie anymore.
No. You're just like a mutated.
You're infected.
You're infected. Yeah. So you're not a zombie? Yes.
Yeah.
Clickers are not zombies. They're scary as hell, but they're not.
They're creepy zombie. They're zombie-like. They have kind of the facets that are familiar to zombies, like the biting someone and things like
that. So I guess we need to lay the ground rules here.
Yeah.
In the second segment, which is all about zombies, by the way. Mm-hmm. I know we've done Resident Evil, but this one's zombie-specific. brought to you by Dead Rising 4. Not a sponsor.
Yeah, not a sponsor. We wish. We wish Capcom would sponsor us. That'd be great.
That would also be a conflict of interest, wouldn't it?
We wouldn't tell anybody.
Great.
No, okay, no, we would tell people if, you know, if we're sponsors for Dead Rising 4, which we hope, Capcom, you're listening, but we know you're not, but it makes us sad, so please sponsor us.
But for the ground rule, are we going to talk about zombie-esque creatures?
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, then explain to me why you love the clicker so much.
I think because they're so different from what we've seen from a lot of zombie games. I mean, people kind of started, by the time The Last of Us came out, I think people were, even though zombie games have sold so well, they were kind of just sick of the whole zombie thing, because there was just such a glut of them. And with The Last of Us, it introduced kind of a whole new facet to zombies, this idea that this fungal infection has, instead of like affecting like insects, has moved on to animals. That like it evolved so much that it would be able to infect humans. And they're just so startlingly different than zombies in terms of just look. Where at first it kind of starts out slow, you eventually kind of grow mad, and like there's like certain like physical attributes that like you have, like your eyes would turn red, your skin become blotchy, but then later on, as the infection becomes worse, you start to basically grow like fungus from your body, and it like can envelop your eyes or grow out of your mouth. And that's why they're called clickers, because that's all they can do with like their tongue and their teeth, because they can't do anything else. You know, that's why they go. That's when they start doing that, because there's so much fungus growing throughout their body, and they become like bloated and contorted. And that's why you see even more evolved versions in the game, like during certain like boss battle like segments where you're fighting these like they're called like bloaters. And again, there's like variations on that. And I mean, that's why I love the kind of like the enemy design in The Last of Us, because you just get all these different versions of the clickers.
I think what you said about them being able to like feel and know what's going on. Mm-hmm. That is fucking terrible.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's horrible.
I think the thing about zombies and like looking at zombie movies and films and stuff, mm-hmm. like that, the thing that gets me over it is just like, well, it can look like someone you know, mm-hmm. but they're dead already. Like, yeah. It's just reanimation. Mm-hmm. It's basically like electrical volts that go through your body that can just make your body move. Like, mm-hmm. that can happen in real life, and that's not a big deal. Although technically it is a big deal.
Yeah.
But the fungus part, I think. The fact that there could be, and there is, a fungus that can just, like, take over your body. I know there's not anything
it's like, for humans. It's like a parasitic fungal-like organism that's capable of, like, infecting an ant. And what's cool is that the parasite would then gain control of the ant. And it would say, like, it wants it to be on, like, a blade of grass. That when, like, a cow comes by and eats it, because that's the parasite's objective, is to get into the cow so that it can proliferate and become bigger and then also breed inside the cow. That's what it does.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's a parasite. That's what it wants. It's always trying to get to a bigger and better host.
What does it do once it's in the cow?
It breeds.
In the cow?
Yeah.
In our meat?
Mm-hmm. That's why we can't eat that stuff. Some things, yeah. That's why these cows can get infected with all these parasites. And that's it, to be very careful. But then they give them antibiotics to kill the parasites.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. We're filled with fungi parasite things.
Fungus are weird as fuck.
Yeah,
it is. But to continue on the clickers, I love most about them, mm-hmm. is their namesake. I think in zombie games, their low... It's so commonplace now that it's kind of comedic, mm-hmm. and it sounds dumb. It sounds very, it's very much the doy, like, I'm stupid, like that kind of stupid trope. Yeah,
they're slow, you know, enemy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Whereas the clickers, they're like, that thing makes it sound like they're hunting or mm-hmm. using some sort of sonar.
They use echolocation.
Yeah. And which is a great design mm-hmm. from Naughty Dog to make that sound reminiscent of just kind of like way things bounce off walls.
Yeah.
And it makes them feel, it makes you, the character player, feel hunted. Mm-hmm. And whereas when I usually play with zombies, it's more of a situation of I'm more powerful.
Yeah.
But I just need to be smart enough to not get boxed in or overwhelmed.
Yeah, exactly. You overwhelm less. Because zombies are most dangerous when they're in mass. But like individually, it's like, whatever.
But even clickers, I feel like one alone is dangerous. Yeah, because it's more mobile. It's still quick.
It's fast, yeah.
Which is fast zombies is rule breaking, and I hate that.
I don't mind fast zombies. I think I like both variations. I mean, I think what the first introduction of fast zombies, at least in terms of film, was I think what 28 Days Later.
Never seen it.
Which okay. I think people kind of hate on that film, like especially the third act. But I think it's a good movie. But even those, like, they're not technically zombies; they're infected. You know, kind of like the clickers in The Last of Us. But I mean, yeah, if you want to get into like. You want to kind of get into fast-moving zombies first?
I think now's the perfect time to bring up Left 4 Dead.
Left 4 Dead, yeah. Which I think is one of the best zombie game franchises. Certainly of the last generation.
I think... But yeah, both because... Well, because technically, and we'll get into this later, Resident Evil isn't really a zombie franchise anymore.
Not anymore. Well, it might be again, but...
Left 4 Dead... seems to be the main one that goes on right now. And even then, it's kind of a dead franchise because Valve can't count past two.
The three. It's too hard.
It's really difficult.
Can't do it.
Like, yeah, which finger do you put on?
Yeah, I know. They don't know. But yeah, I mean, for Left, like even the first Left 4 Dead, which at the time, it was developed by Turtle Rock Studios, who later went on to develop Evolve.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. for that. But Valve was actually concerned that they thought people wouldn't like it. And they eventually actually fast-tracked Left 4 Dead 2. But it turned out that Left 4 Dead would turn out to be, I think, one of the best games. I think it came out in, like, 2008, I want to say. And it certainly was one of my favorite games, even though it was, you know, relative, you could say maybe it was light on content, but it was a game I kept replaying over and over and over and over again because it offered me all these different kind of avenues in terms of play. Like, certain, like, environments would change and things like that. And then probably introduce one of the best things about the game is the special infected. Again, a new iteration on zombies, like the... Like the, oh, I forgot some of the names of these enemies.
The liquor.
The liquor. The guy that vomits all the time. The big fat zombie that would then vomit, which then attract other zombies. Oh no, the smoker. The smoker is the zombie with the giant tongue that would be able to latch on to people, and that would cause damage, and basically you get stuck. You have the hunter who would then like pounce on different people and basically, you know, rip them apart. I mean, I loved all those different... Oh, and of course, probably the most famous of all of them is the tank, which is this giant, muscle-bound version of all the zombies, which anytime, like, you hear the tank come, you always know because his theme plays, and it's always, like, just completely terrifying. And then, yeah, so the vomit-spewing zombies called the Boomer, which... It's appropriate because if you shoot him, he explodes, which then could then, basically he's a suicide bomber, you know, where if he explodes and he gets all his weird vomit slime on you, that attracts more zombies. And of course, probably other than the tank.
Yeah, when you mentioned the tank, I thought you were going to bring up this one.
Is the witch, which I think is the only female of the special effect, at least in the original game, where she basically just... cries, she remains static, like in one place. She doesn't really move around. Unless you shoot her. And then she can kill you in one hit.
That's what I was confused by. Yeah. I didn't play enough Left 4 Dead.
The original?
Like, regularly.
Yeah.
I played it all the way through, and I've played it multiple times, but not enough to really know. Is the witch always in the same spot?
No, it's in different spots.
Okay.
Oh, the special infected, if you just play like a single player or whatever, or just regular multiplayer without other players playing as those special infected, then they can be anywhere around the level.
But they couldn't be the witch, right? From what I remember.
I don't remember.
Because actually. It became more of like a 4-on-4 situation where one person got to be one thing.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think anyone could become the witch. But then you could unlock the tank, for instance. Like if you racked up like enough, I forget what it kills or points as a special infected, then you can play as the tank, which then you can basically hit someone like half across like a area and they could just like, you can incapacitate them. So, I mean, it was great. The first game. I loved it. In the course of Left 4 Dead 2, that's the other thing I want to actually mention. They introduced like a ton of new characters, like the four characters you play as, which are Francis, Bill, Zoe, and Lewis. And I think they're all great. You know, they each have like their like, you know, individual personalities. They have, you know, all of them like a unique look. Like Francis is like this like biker. Bill is this like this Vietnam vet. You know, I think that was great. And they all have like kind of their back and forth dialogue, and it changes from level to level. But even if you play like the same level over again, their dialogue will change, and certain characters will talk to each other. So I think that's great.
And I think they expanded upon that idea a lot more in the second one.
Yeah, well, Left 4 Dead 2, which I think it you know introduced like in terms of just gameplay. Like a lot of new types of weapons, like they introduced melee weapons, whereas in the first Left 4 Dead you didn't have any. I mean, that was great. I mean, who doesn't love to use an axe on a zombie or a baseball bat or a cricket bat, of course, you know, made famous by Shaun of the Dead. But yeah, it introduced, I think, a number of new playable characters, including Coach, Rochelle, Nick, and Ellis. And I think all of them are great. You know, like Coach is an ex-football coach, an high school football coach. Like Nick is like a con man, and like Ellis is, I think like a car repair man. He has that great voice.
He's a
Friendly mechanic. And Rochelle is Rochelle. I never played as Rochelle. I don't know if there's anything particularly interesting about her. But yeah, introduced like a ton of like cool types of environments, like a carnival that was completely, you know, went through like the zombie apocalypse and is completely like infected with all kinds of zombies everywhere and things like that. Like a hotel complex, and even the last game, like you had like a hospital that was like overrun by zombies. And I really appreciated the levels and how in different playthroughs they can change in certain ways. Like certain areas are cut off or inaccessible, which I think is really fun. So,
and didn't they end up meeting the Left 4 Dead 1 characters in the passing or the sacrifice?
Yeah, in the sacrifice, I think not the passing, but yeah, they introduced a lot of DLC campaigns. But yeah, in the sacrifice, all the four main characters come and meet each other, which I think is really fun. And I think actually you can play as the older Left 4 Dead characters, I think, in some Left 4 Dead 2 levels, which I think is the survival.
The sacrifice,
thank you. So I think that was cool. And then again, these depending on how many times you play it, like they can all have different like interactions with each other in terms of dialogue, which again I think is really fun.
And I think that's where Valve really expanded, is on creating characters within a very linear game. Mm-hmm. There wasn't really much story, but
no, there's not.
They told it all in voice acting.
Yeah.
And I think what's great about Left 4 Dead is that it is an introduction of new gameplay styles.
Yeah.
Within, because at that point, zombies were much, like, you stay in the sense of you're getting chased all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, that it stays that way. But this was the first time I really remember playing a zombie.
Yeah.
In a sense. I mean, there were PS2 games, Deadhead Fred, I think, was one of them.
What about Xbox's Stubbs the Zombie?
Stubbs the Zombie, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah. One of those 40s-esque games Destroy All Humans era, mm-hmm. which Destroy All Humans 2, now on PS4 as well.
Yeah, great.
But I love that. I love the opportunity to be a zombie mm-hmm. and for developers to find an interesting way to do it. I think Turtle Rock and Valve really nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saddened by the fact that Evolve doesn't exist, but like, why don't we have a third Left 4 Dead? I think now's the time with, I think, Xbox Live and PlayStation PSN. 4 finally both being, up there on par. And I think what we've come through with, like, Twitch streams and stuff like mm-hmm. that would make Left 4 Dead hella fun. Yeah. Switch, nothing.
There's no way.
There's no way.
I really want the franchise to come back, and I definitely play because I loved it, both 1 and 2.
It doesn't seem like it's that difficult. In terms
it's not
like,
much of a learning.
You don't have to write. No, I mean, like, in developing one of these, you're not writing too much story.
No, it's just Valve, like, we're making too much money off Steam, so we don't really feel like it.
Why did the second one come out so soon?
Because Valve was concerned because they didn't think Left 4 Dead was, they thought people would have a very negative reaction to it. And that's why they fast-tracked Left 4 Dead 2. But when
just
they
to
realized,
not waste money on it or something?
Yeah, exactly. They thought, we want this to be a franchise. And of course, it's been dead for how many years now? 5 or 6 years at this point? Because I think Left 4 Dead 2 came out in 2009, I want to say. Like
I remember the
after.
Backlash on
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah,
too.
That was, it was famous. People said, I'm not going to buy. Like, yeah, you are. Yeah, I'm not going to buy Left 4 Dead 2.
There was like a Steam totally group did. Of ban or yeah. boycott Left 4 Dead 2, but all of them were playing it.
All of it, yeah, as you can go on their accounts and say, like playing Left 4 Dead 2. It's like, yeah, full of shit. And I was happy to buy both games because like, I think both are great. So, but yeah, I guess in terms of like, is there any other like kind of fast moving zombies? I guess probably the only other one would be the Call of Duty World at War and all the kind of Call of Duty zombie games. At least some of the modified infected.
You think they're fat? It's okay. See,
some of the modified infected are.
I'm an OG World at War player. Mm-hmm. Don't give me none of that overcomplicated bullshit from Black Ops. And
oh, yeah, well, that's what I'm talking. They introduce the fast moving zombies.
Do they? See, yeah. They made
original.
It like a story and everything, right?
Some of them do. Yeah.
The original World at War is when that was classic zombies. That's mm-hmm. the only zombies I ever want to play. Because it became too complicated mm-hmm. after that. It became its own franchise in a sense. Yeah. And I think there are plenty of instances where it could have just been its own game.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny enough. Like, the developer of World at War, I think it was Treyarch, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't think that it turned into as big a thing as it did. They kind of just added it on as like, this is something that people might like to play.
Fun.
Yeah, it's fun, exactly. But it turned into, its own entire thing where they actually started crafting, like, a narrative. Like, I think in the original Black Ops, like, they had, like, George Romero and Robert Englund and the girl who played Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and you basically have to fight John Romero, or not John Romero, excuse me, George Romero. And each kind of new game they have, like, they get, like, all these big voice actors or, like, actors.
And it was the second one, we talked about this during the President's game, segment, where it was...
That was Black Ops.
JFK, Black Ops. Fidel Castro,
Richard Nixon.
And whoever was the Robert secretary.
McNair. Okay.
Yes.
You're the politician. Which I thought was great. But yeah, as I haven't played many of the more recent Call of Duty games, but yeah, they've gotten a little too complicated, because I've watched Let's Plays and there's, like, things you just have to do to progress. Like, I think in one of the, I think Black Ops 2, I think it was, where it takes place on a moon base and you have to do all these weird, like, puzzles when you're
like activate sensors to progress, like, and then it starts, like, you drink cola to, like, speed up and you get your perks and stuff. The thing about World at War was, I would actually get a little spooked, because all of a sudden, the way it works, it keys in and it takes full advantage of what is terrifying about zombies, is that they don't stop, they don't fear, and they always end up outnumbering you. Yeah. And it had that same classic feel of, like, the original Night of the Living Dead, of being trapped in a house. And it also had that great little music with it. I think it was very simple, but also it just really nailed the gameplay aspect of what I think some of the best games that have to do with zombies, like, understand is the fact that you are overrun and trapped in a location. And that's, and I, you know, this is kind of an easy transition to what I think is my favorite game about zombies, and is the reason we're kind of talking about this, because it just had a release, Dead Rising. It blatantly takes from, is it Dawn of the Dead?
In the mall. It's a classic, zombie location.
You play classic Frank Rez, who has seen wars, you know. He's been there. He comes to Willamette County.
It's in Colorado, right? I know it's in Colorado.
Okay, Willamette, Colorado. He goes to chase the story, finds himself in a mall during a zombie infestation.
Yeah, it's been overrun,
But 72 hours, your helicopter will come back.
Yeah, it's introduced, like, this weird time mechanic.
Yeah,
at least infamous. In the first two games.
Yeah, infamous. And it's basically, you're just in a mall.
Yeah.
And I think that it's my favorite because it does have a story. It does have a set time limit.
It tries,
And it, like, you're supposed to, like, save as many people as you can. And, like, you'll run into these, it's...
What are those types of missions called? Where you have to save someone, they have to follow you. You know what I'm talking about, right?
What is it called?
Yeah, that type of mission.
Oh, escort mission.
Escort missions. Thank you. I always forget. Yeah, fucking
escort missions are the worst.
Sucks. Yeah, no more in video games.
And then you you run upon some, like, maniacs, these special psychos type of zombies, or not even zombies, but, like, people who have been trapped in the mall along with you and just have lost their fucking minds. I remember you, like, meet a butcher. Who just, like, throws pig carcasses at you, and there's a zombie that's juggling chainsaws.
Yeah, a clown.
Yeah, clowns that are juggling chainsaws. And it, your environment is part of your journey, and you get to sort of just explore and invent new ways to knock out zombies. And it really, it makes what's horrifying about zombies fun. And I remember as you progress, you're like, it's goofy. It's B-movie schlock at its best.
Oh, yeah.
And it just really, I don't know, it was one of the early next gen games, which for some reason I always just consider the PS3 360 era that's next gen. Like,
yeah.
For some reason, that was the big leap to
at the
HD.
Time, yeah, it was,
and Dead Rising was one of the instances where it was like, you needed HD.
Yeah, you did.
Or you needed HD TV.
I mean, that was so impressive about it. It's like, you have all those zombies on screen. At the time, we were all blown away by it. It's like, wow. All these different character models.
Like, all these endless possibilities. Mm-hmm. You want to go to that random food court and, like, stat boost with, like, pies. Yeah. And you can throw plates, like, frisbees at zombies. And so none of that is really for story purposes.
Yeah.
Half of that is just for goofy fun. And I remember the Wii port, shop till you drop. Or chop to drop.
Get it? Horrible. It wasn't good. Which had much, because, well, one, it wasn't HD, and it had much less like characters on screen in terms of the zombies. There was like five.
It made no sense.
And they all disappear like as soon as you kill them.
Yeah, it was the dumbest. But like your thoughts on Dead Island? I've only ever played the original. Actually, for a game I love that much, I've only ever played.
I've played all of them. Actually, I kind of liked this, even though Dead Rising 2 was pretty much just repeating the same things from the original Dead Rising, and Chuck Green's kind of a shitty protagonist. What I liked about Dead Rising 2, and which has eventually been carried on throughout the entire franchise, is basically creating and customizing weapons. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for example, you can use like a paddle for like a boat, and you can attach chainsaws to both ends, and you can use that to kill zombies. Or you can make one of my favorite weapons in the game, which is the kind of the Wolverine hands, where you take boxing gloves and you attach like machetes onto them, and you can kill the kind of zombies. And you know, even though Dead Rising 2, you know, I think too familiar, but I think they progressed in a much better way with Dead Rising 3, which created a much larger open world. Introduced, I think, I mean, one of the few games that had a Hispanic protagonist, and I think what Nick Ramos, I want to say his name is.
Yeah.
But, and again, that where you can now customize like vehicles and they'd be huge death machines, you can kill like 1,000 zombies in like a minute or so. And I loved all that. And of course, with the most recent release of Dead Rising 4,
your boy's back.
Frank West still covering wars. Now, and of course, it's very appropriate because it takes place during Christmas, and that's really nice because I always want to kill zombies while singing Jingle Bells and all kinds of other Christmas.
And I've heard the game really like commits to Christmas, like the themes are Christmas, the menus are kind of Christmas-esque, mm-hmm. which I find very interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a big commitment to make
to one particular holiday or season.
I don't know what it is about Frank West, but I really want to play Dead Rising 4 just because he's in it. And I remember they even kind of course corrected in a sense for Dead Rising 2. Didn't they release like not a patch, but like a side story where
A separate title. It was actually, I forget the name of it, but yeah, it was a totally separate non-canon Dead Rising title where it just followed Frank West in Fortune City. And where, like, Chuck Green, who was a protagonist in 2, you actually kill him in, like, one of the first missions.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because just, so, like...
Like, by accident?
No, he's a psychopath. You have to kill him. But, yeah, it's the other thing. There's actually, like, a story throughout all the games that's, like, this narrative on how the zombie infection got started by a bee sting and everything that. Yeah.
I never knew what the story was
people.
About.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing where people, they've invented a way where people who are infected by this infection... they put like microchips in them and to stop the infection from like spreading or basically their zombie traits from coming out. Or they have this drug called Zombrex that you can buy and you have to like take every 24 hours or you turn into a zombie. So there's actually like a narrative of some kind, which I imagine it carries into 4, you know, like that's the thing about 3. It was the most narrative heavy of all the games.
I just remember it was dark and gritty upon reveal and that turned me off.
See, it in the reveal, it certainly was, but the game itself I played, it's off the wall goofy. It just, I think in the initial reveal, people, that was at the time, like, you know, dark is good, you know, but then I think they realized that and they showed, no, it's
we
all
need color.
Goofy.
We need color.
Yeah. And it has that.
4 definitely like goes all in with the color. It looks like,
yeah. If people, you know, had a negative reaction to 3, which I'm not sure why, because it was just as goofy as the other games, but yeah, 4 introduces more color. So
that's my personal favorite mm-hmm. for like favorite zombie game, but like, is there one that is Last of Us, Left 4 Dead? Are those your favorite zombie games, or is there another one?
Because
technically, I understand Last of Us is mm-hmm. the best game if we're going to consider something with zombies.
Yeah,
or Resident Evil 4 if we want to talk about that a little bit. But
I mean, we don't necessarily have to talk about Resident Evil 4, which again, those aren't really zombies. Like they're infected.
Las Plagas.
Yeah, Resident Evil 4 and 5. It's Ouroboros and 6. I don't fucking know because I don't really fucking care because that game sucks. But in the original, the first 3 Resident Evil games, 2 and Nemesis, that is a classic zombie infection where you're fighting zombies like in a mansion and eventually in a city. And in case of Nemesis, then they start kind of getting into the whole, you're fighting like a different types of like zombies, like the Lickers and the Nemesis and things like that. And so, I mean, I appreciated those. They definitely, Resident Evil helped kind of propel zombies later in the generation, like from the late 90s on into the 2000s and the mid-2000s and what we have right now.
Yeah, and so, hopefully they continue to push the like zombie genre, in a sense, forward with like the new 7.
Yeah,
which,
Biohazard.
Is it made for VR? I always forget.
They say, they didn't say it's built from the ground up, like using VR, but they said it'll be fully VR compatible. Which we don't know at that point. That could be. I mean, that sounds great, but we want to see if it actually is. If it actually works, or we're all kind of left going like, "What the
hell's going on?" Have you been playing the demo? Isn't there like an hour long demo now at this point?
I mean, I haven't played. Yeah, that's the thing. When they revealed it at PSX, it was like they added a whole other section to it. I've only played the previous two kind of expansions.
I refuse to play.
I think it's great.
I just don't want to, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I want. It's the same thing with like horror film trailers. Yeah. I want all the spooks to be saved.
Yeah. No, I get it. I think, but I think it's completely separate. It's not from the originals. It's not. It's like a whole separate thing. Kind of like what PT wasn't supposed to be anything with Silent Hills. It was just like, this is what kind of what we're thinking of.
Oh, the vibe we're going.
It's the vibe. That's what the Resident Evil 7 demo is. It's just the vibe of what you kind of expect.
Okay.
And even then, from what I play, I don't even think 7 is going to be a classic kind of zombie game. It's kind of dealing with all kinds of things like supernatural, well, some type of infection where these people seem to be completely controlled, like their faculties, and they can talk to you and everything like that. You know, you can. They're all apparently racist, you know, hillbillies or whatever.
Is there something? Has zombies just become like a negative term at this point? Everyone is just infected.
Well, I think when you hear zombies, I think maybe developers say, oh, it's not zombies. It's a, because I think maybe zombies at this point is kind of boring. So they want to kind of do their own, take their own spin on. Exactly. That's why in The Last of Us, they're not called zombies. They're called clickers, or it's a different type of infection. Or even in Left 4 Dead, they're not called zombies. They're just called the infected. So
people, are they?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought those were zombies.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not according to Turtle Rock or
I appreciate that Treyarch called them Nazi zombies. Like, they are undead Nazis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But, I kind of want to go into a classic zombie game where they're actually called zombies, which I don't know if you ever played, but State of Decay. Which was originally released on the Xbox 360.
Mixed things on this.
It is certainly...
Initially,
at least. It is... I will say it's a great proof of concept. And where it was, I think it was created by, I want to say, Undead Labs, I believe is the developer. And it was like their version of like an open world zombie game where it kind of takes place in this like rural area and like has like small towns and things like that. And where the basic structure of the game is just you trying to survive the zombie apocalypse, where the focus of the game is you basically collecting resources, saving people, bringing them back to your base. And what the game introduces is like kind of like a base building mechanic where you can build like a medical facility, you can build like sleeping area, and so this kind of raises the stats of your area to keep everybody happy. It's kind of like Sims the zombie game to a certain extent. And there's some, I mean, there's a lot of open world components in terms of you're able to drive and move around, and there is like a kind of like a GTA like mission structure where you can go on these missions and complete certain things. You can unlock new weapons and melee weapons and basically progress and become stronger. You know, competent enough where you're good at surviving the zombie apocalypse. The problem is that it's at least at the time when I played the 360, it was filled with bugs.
Yeah, that's what I remember hearing. I remember seeing all those early reviews really low numbers. And then halfway through the year, I hear good things about it.
They constantly made updates for it, new DLC, because the game actually ends like really awkwardly. It just ends where you unlock a new area, quote unquote, unlock a new area, and the game is just cut to black, and that's it, and you get credits.
What?
But eventually, they started adding DLC campaign
for free? Campaigns.
No, I think they were paid. I don't think they were too expensive though, because the game itself, I think, was $20.
Oh, okay.
But even at the time, I thought it was worth it, because again, it was pretty much a proof of concept, and where they actually have released it again on the Xbox One is, I think it was called the State of Decay like Enhanced Edition or something like that, where they fixed some of the bugs, it looks a little bit better. But the other thing
is the full game. They finally gave the full game.
I mean, as a more complete game, I'd say. Like, I think the original game is definitely worth playing, and it has its problems. Again, it's a great proof of concept, and it's been on sale multiple times. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, they recently announced that, I think the most recent E3, State of Decay 2, which they want to, Microsoft clearly wants to turn this into a long-lasting franchise. But it's definitely, it's what I kind of want from a zombie game, where it's focused on like an open world, and it's all about resource gathering and saving people and building your base and making it like to survive like waves of zombies. And eventually, I'm hopeful as the series progresses, but also people as well, because you can encounter like dangerous people like in the world, and you have to like fight them and things like that. And also introduces special infected too.
And isn't that always...
It borrows a lot. It borrows a lot from other types of zombie
games. It reminds me of I remember seeing a trailer for Cliffy B's new game, Fortnite. I mean, I think that ended up getting canceled.
Yeah,
but that reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned humans ended up always like being. But the thing about zombie games is humans always end up being the
assholes.
Worst.
Yeah.
Like more dangerous to you than the actual zombies, because zombies don't really think, they don't have a plan of attack.
You learn to deal with zombies after a while. They become gnats.
They become gnats, a very routine, and you like understand their motives. Whereas humans always seem to like cause a winding path, and that's why I want, you know, transitioning into the next title, Telltale's The Walking Dead. I think I love that game. At least the first season. I've never played the second one.
You should play it. It's
good. And I know season 3 just got announced for, is it starting this month?
December. December. Yeah, end of December.
So I need to play 2.
We'll review it.
But season 1, I loved how the main focus really was the human interactions, the characters. And the zombies more are just like obstacles that end up pushing humans to their brink against each other.
Yeah, the zombies are there for gameplay purposes, you know, pretty much. It's everything that's interesting is the human stuff.
And how they're going to interrelate, especially that, I forgot the main character's name. I know.
Lee and
Clementine. Mm-hmm. That relationship, which to me kind of felt like a precursor to The Last of Us.
It came out before The Last of Us.
Just because it came first.
Yeah.
It's kind of started the trend with like watching a younger person all the time. Yeah. I assume that's what God of War is also going to be like.
Yeah, I imagine. I'm excited for that. As long as Kratos is not an asshole, he's not be fine.
He's just a dad.
Boy, find the deer. Feed me.
You really are like love that whole dad Kratos vibe.
I think it's awesome because I hate Kratos and it made me interested in him for the first time ever.
He's just going to be a mean dad.
I think he's going to be a strict dad. He'll be a firm but fair.
Firm but fair. Okay. Mm-hmm. But The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
The Walking Dead. This really helped kick off Telltale in a sense.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who now has like them. 8 franchises going on at once. Can't seem to fix one at a time. Batman's not great.
It's good. Mm-hmm. Batman's good.
Yeah. The story and the idea. But like putting it together.
Mm-hmm. It's debatable. We'll see in the last episode how it all comes together.
Okay. But Telltale's The Walking Dead. I think that's their best product. Just that first season. I understand it's a little like buggy, but I think at the time it was their first real foray into this. I understand they had Back to the Future a little before that.
Back to the Future, Jurassic Park.
The Jurassic Park.
No one played.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
But The Walking Dead was just like, it was such an intimate story to me.
Yeah.
And I remember all the choices, they may have not mattered as much as I thought,
mm-hmm.
but they really, each time I made a choice, it felt like impact.
Yeah.
And to me, this is an interesting use case for zombies because, like, as we said, they're a backseat. They're just there. Mm-hmm. They're just dressing to the real story,
mm-hmm.
which is this interpersonal relationship as you build and watching people betray each other and you having to make choices
mm-hmm.
about who to kill, who not to kill,
who to save,
and all that. It's just each time someone died, even though I'd only spent maybe an hour with them, which is kind of crazy to believe. The Walking Dead game isn't really that long, but each little thing's like the moment with Duck or potentially leaving someone on the side of the highway, and then that ultimate end choice you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts, mm-hmm. and I think it's really the best example of storytelling mm-hmm. within zombie universes. But
yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I remember playing this. It was 2012 when the game came out, and it's one of the few video games I think to ever like make me cry and to feel like so sad after playing it. It was like, but very fulfilled. And the other thing I just want to say is that it one, fuck Ben, who is that asshole teenager who fucks everything up, and I totally left him to die. You know, he did not. I mean, did you have to do that choice when he's in the clock tower or whatever like that? And he's like, "Help me!" I didn't help him. I let him die and fall down. And he got torn apart by zombies. Jeez. Great, great, great moment. But yeah, it kind of what I thought was great is that it introduced the Telltale formula, which had already been present, but to just a whole new generation of gamers where it's a choice based game, kind of. Telltale Games is like a coloring book. You can fill it in all different colors, but it's always going to come out and be that one image. And that's what I felt with like the first game, where I can make Lee Everett like my Lee and how he kind of like acts around certain people and treats other people. But making like having Lee just be that my particular character and having him interact with Clementine, just it meant a lot to me at the time. And then eventually how that kind of does carry on into season 2 and how Clementine and other characters who may or not be alive in season 2 kind of remember Lee. I just think that's great. I hope that continues on with The Walking Dead season 3.
And I think it works here in the best case. Like, I've complained about Telltale mm-hmm. and what they're doing, but I think the story was so strong here.
Yeah.
And they seemed very focused with the Lee Clementine thing. This is what the story is about. This is what we want. It's all about Clem. Like, it's so focused that all that other stuff, all that other jazz, even when it's not necessarily what I wanted it to be, mm-hmm. ultimately the path that they were leading me down was something worthwhile and something better than I could have come up with on my own.
Yeah.
But are there any last games that you want to be sure to mention? I know you've got to talk about a piece of DLC here.
I mean, yeah, probably the most famous like zombie type DLC ever is Red Dead Redemption Undead Nightmare, which of course, you know, Red Dead Redemption, which is a fantastic game, introduced probably, I think arguably, yeah, I think it is one of the best like DLC just campaigns ever, certainly yeah. last generation. And where, yeah, it's a kind of, it's an alternate story where suddenly there's a zombie infection in Old West and John Marston's got to, you know, get out his gun and his horse and start shooting zombies. And it's just great. And where not only the DLC kind of introduce zombies to it, and it's classic zombies where the only way you can kill them is shooting them in the head, which so few zombie games now actually do that, where that is the only way you can kill them in Undead Nightmare, or set them on fire, which also works.
Dead Space count? I just thought about that.
Does Dead Space count?
Yeah.
I guess it does. I never actually thought of it as that, but I guess they are zombies because they come back to life. They're infected by like this alien organism.
That might be my favorite zombie
yeah.
game. But continue.
Okay, yeah, that actually might be my favorite zombie game ever. One of my favorite games ever. But yeah, with Red Dead Redemption, now they introduced like cool zombies and a great, just kind of very fun campaign because it's all goofy and characters are dying.
I think that's how yeah. zombies need to be treated.
Yeah, for the most part, unless you get like a different kind of iteration of zombies with like The Last of Us or Dead Space or things like that. But yeah, at this point, yeah, I think zombies in general.
But I mean, like classic zombies.
Yeah.
Like
have fun with it. Then you always need to have fun with it.
Because like you're saying, a lot of developers are avoiding the term zombies because it kind of has this cheesy connotation.
Yeah.
Well, then I want to see them used more in the cheesy connotation.
Yeah. Like have fun with it. Yeah. That kind of thing. But what I also appreciate about the DLC is that it introduced different kind of supernatural monster creatures. Like you can actually capture like the four horses of the apocalypse and you can ride them like
really?
Plague and death and yeah. And you can tame them. You can use them in the game and they all have like different types of abilities. Like I think like plague, you can like, it has like gnats and people like die like when they're around it or things like that. And so, certainly like horses are faster, but then, and also, of course, as we all know, when John Marston dies at the end of Red Dead Redemption, in Undead Nightmare, the game ends where he is dead, but then it comes back crawling out of the grave, and you play as zombie John Marston, which again is super funny, and he only like groans and moans throughout the entire thing. Like he doesn't have any more dialogue; it's all he does. So, and like when people talk to him, like NPCs, you can introduce like some of the minor missions from the original game where you have to rescue this stagecoach or whatever. Mm-hmm. People are talking to him; he just responds and like grunts, and they're talking to him like he's completely normal. So again, it's just really really fun and one of the best pieces of DLC ever. But yeah, there's some other games I just wanted to mention. Of course, like the classic, you know, 1990s game, House of the Dead, which is, you know, that first-person shooter where it's kind of like on rails and you're going through and killing all these zombies and monsters and things like that. Just a fantastic game. I don't know if you ever played House of the Dead.
I have played.
One of its iterations.
Typing of the Dead?
Yeah, that counts.
I love Typing of the Dead. It's so fun. But I have played the original House of the Dead.
And it helps with your spelling.
Yeah.
Get
them words per minute up.
Exactly. But then one of the other games that actually came out recently in this generation of consoles is Dying Light.
Which was made by the Resident Evil guy?
No, it was made by Techland, who are actually the makers of the Dead Island franchise, which I left off this list because Dead Island sucks. but I wanted to bring up Dying Light because, I mean, they're a Polish developer, but they really learned from like all the mistakes they had originally made with like Dead Island, and they made a lot of them. And with here, it was improved where it's a first-person perspective. It's kind of like, to a certain extent, kind of plays like Far Cry or pretty much like a Far Cry game where it takes place in like this actually cool location, like a Middle Eastern city that has been overrun by zombies. And like you can kind of create customizable weapons, and you know, you can also use firearms. And it also introduces, I think, like any open world game, at least a first person perspective open world game, parkour, where you can actually like jump on zombies' heads to get to like the next building, and like you also get like a grappling hook, and it's so much fun. Maybe it takes itself a little too serious, but I just think it's great. Oh, and the most important thing is don't go out at night, because then all the zombies are super aggressive, and you get like those evil, kind of Resident Evil-esque like liquor zombies that come after you, which are terrifying. But yeah, Dying Light is awesome. Is there any other like zombie games that you can think of that you think people should definitely check out? I mean, Dead Space.
Right? I think it was really Dead Space.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that Resident Evil 4 like is the thing that changed like how that kind of third person zombie thing can work. But I think Dead Space really is the one that perfected
it. Yeah. No, it's better than Resident Evil 4.
Yeah. And it's Dead Space is the best Resident Evil game that has been out in years. It might be the best Resident Evil game, to be honest. So yeah, if I think about zombie games, it really is either has to be schlocky fun, as much fun as Dead Rising, or as horrific and different. I think Dead Space
has to be different.
Different.
Yeah, yeah.
Different it's a different zombies. Environment. It does the terrifying thing about zombies, especially in like The Last of Us, is the human body is like destroyed and sort of transmogrified. And I think that really comes through in the body horror that we've talked about in Dead Space. And so like, it's gotta be one of those and really like lean into it. But yeah, it's Dead Rising and Dead Space. I think those are my two favorite zombie games.
No, totally agreed. So what's your zombie apocalypse plan? Like eventually when the undead hordes come,
they can't climb ladders, guys.
Yeah.
They can't climb ladders.
Yeah. Walking Dead.
Wait, can they climb ladders in Walking Dead?
They don't know on that fucking show. They're like,
oh, that show's garbage. Climb, don't talk
it
to
is garbage. Yeah, actually, we won't talk about that show. Play Telltale's The Walking Dead instead. It's a much better game.
Coral.
Tell you about the time my buddy Keith drove his car off a cliff, broke both his legs. Hey, it's not a funny ha-ha story so much as it's a make-you-think story.